Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. If this is your first time watching or listening to the show, know that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject, because sharing my show or others like it that focus on improved health, happiness, education, and success is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, our topic today is going to be very heartfelt. A lot of people may not know, but every week across the nation, parents and families witness young athletes sustain injuries while participating in contact sports. Often, these incidents go unreported and undiagnosed, with the assumption that no lasting harm has been done. However, the truth is far more alarming. In our guest's new book, Youth Contact Sports and Broken Brains, Bruce Parkman shares the heartbreaking story of his son, Mac Parkman, whose exposure to concussive and subconcussive trauma resulted in a silent battle with depression, schizophrenia, and ultimately suicide at the age of 17. Bruce's thought-provoking book sheds light on the scientific connection between mental illness and repetitive brain trauma experienced by athletes in contact sports, offering crucial insights to parents seeking to safeguard their children's well-being. Bruce himself served our country for 21 years, including 18 years as a Green Beret. He is currently the CEO of Blue Light, a software development company. And with the passing of his son, Mac, Bruce devoted himself to understanding why so many young athletes are living with mental illness or taking their own lives. His findings led to the formation of the Mac Parkman Foundation for Adolescent Concussive Trauma and to writing this book. He currently is on the Veterans Advisory Board for the Concussion Legacy Foundation and supports Project Enlist, which recruits veterans to donate their brains for research. Bruce, thank you for joining us and welcome to Answers Network.
Mr. Cardoza, I cannot thank you enough for this opportunity to talk to your audience and to, you know, to share and convey what we have learned to the parents and grandparents and athletes that are out there. This is an unbelievable opportunity, and I thank you so much for the time.
Well, you're very welcome, and I look at this and I think that the fact that you've gone through what you've gone through and you took the time to delve into something so that nobody else feels what the pain that you felt, I think is a very giving thing yourself. I was just speaking to Sam as before we came on and said, you know, I'm excited that I'm going to become a grandpa for the first time here in the next couple of months. And these are all things now that I'm thinking about again that I haven't since my kids were small. So I love the fact that you have taken your time to bring this to light. And I think to start off with, if you can share a little bit about your story so people know where you're coming from.
Yes, sir. And about being a granddad, I just had my first one myself. So it's thought provoking what you said about how now these are things we didn't consider when our children were there. My son was just a beautiful, amazing young man. I mean, he was my soulmate. And he was born when I was jumping the berm into Iraq as a contractor, and I didn't know if I'd ever see him. And I wrote him a letter, and actually I wrote him a letter every year, almost every 6 months throughout his life. He didn't know this. I was going to give them to him when I died. And they are now the part of another book called Letters to Mac that I'm writing right now. But my son was just an amazing young man. He was, you know, just kind, loving, respectful, thoughtful, everything that I wasn't as a child, everything that I still try to be as a man. And And when it came to contact sports, I approached sports from a health perspective. I wanted my son to be healthy. I wanted him to – I've never played contact sports. I mean, I play rugby even to this day, but I didn't start till I was 30. I just knew that sports were good. Sports were healthy. And so he came to me, "Hey, Dad, can I wrestle?" In first grade, I'm like, "Yeah." It was all him and his buddies, and they had this amazing – that's how he got into wrestling. And sports for my son was all about being part of a team. He just loved being with the guys. I mean, he wasn't going to break any state records. He was very good at what he did. He was a good ball player. He played rugby. He played hockey. He played whatever his friends were playing. Mac was in. That's the kind of guy he was. And but since the age of six, and then with skiing and snowboarding, it's just too much. And we didn't know that every time that he put on those helmets and the pads, and we made sure he had the best gear, that his brain was getting shaken. And in the last couple, 3 years, that now that we look back, the only form of mental illness that we could think about was he was apathetic. But that's also what children that are getting ready to become men and then join the army, they push away. Not they push, but he didn't want to, nothing was really important to him, man. He just wanted to spend time with his video games, and he just was more quiet. But he never really — we had no red flag. So towards the end, he was just he's struggling, but he was struggling on his own. And I think that's a lot that we need to understand. Our kids don't talk. And in the end, I was the last person to see him alive. He didn't want to play football anymore. I remember him sitting there all handsome, his football bag. And I hugged him. I kissed him twice a day when he went to school and when I saw him at night before he went to bed. And I was like, "Make good decisions, son." He goes, "I will, Dad." And this boy was getting ready to kill himself. And I gave him a hug. I kissed him on the cheek and he left. And an hour later, I got this frantic call from my daughter saying that Mac had posted a video saying that he was going to harm himself. Mm-hmm. And we immediately went to the rock. He had literally climbed up a 100-foot rock, made the video, we found out afterwards, at the foot of that rock. That's how resolute my son was, that he was not staying on this earth. He was going, and he was going where God was leading him, and he was done with the pain, he was done with the suffering, he was done with the long nights, and he literally walked up that rock, posted that video, and took 37 steps and launched himself off a 100-foot rock to his death. And God had placed him in a crevice. We blanketed that area with 150 people. We were up, at 5:30 in the morning. I got back to home, and I told my wife, I'm going to bring him back. I'm going to go find him. I know he's alive. I went back out at 6, and probably by the middle of the day, we finally had to call in the canines because we were all over the place. So, we were just with no red flags, absolutely floored that our son had done this. And of course, everything was drugs and pornography and Satan and everything. We had nothing. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for the coroner, 2 months later, that said, he mentioned CTE. He asked me, "Did your son play contact sports?" Because I asked him when he said it was suicide, why did my son, that was loved, never knew abuse, that, his family's been blessed. His father worked hard. He'd been around the world with me. We've been scuba diving in Tahiti. We've been to the pyramids. We've done all this. He had no reason to go. And he asked me about contact sports and CTE, and he had taken a class. If he did not mention that, I would not be here talking to you right now, because I had my own issues after he died. I wanted to follow him, but I ended up reaching out, and through the grace of God, I not only was able to establish a relationship with Boston University and the NFL brain bank, the sports brain bank that's up there, but because of some criminal activity that happened at my son's death through the football team, that he was medicating at night with his schizophrenia with marijuana. Mm-hmm. He was getting from them. We never cremated the body, so we were able to make a full donation, and that's what launched me on this journey that got me to this phone call with you, sir.
Wow. We have a question that's coming in, and it sounds like a parent that may be at a similar crossroad, but much earlier on. And normally I have all kinds of questions that I want to ask, but I'm going to start with this, because it just, I feel that it touches on a lot of what you just said. This one reads, our son has played some level of football from Pop Warner to high school for the past 6 or 7 years. He's now 17 years old, and over the past year, he's become more distant. He's changed his group of friends, and he's complained of having frequent headaches. When we asked the school officials about the possibility of him having had a concussion, they told us, that's just being a teenager. What do you suggest that we do to learn more about what's happening to our son? And this is from Catherine in Los Angeles.
So here's what I'm telling you, Catherine, is what I've learned. Your son has endured what's called subconcussive trauma or repeated head injuries since he started Pop Warner. The brain that God has given him, he only has one of them, is a very, very complex organ that goes through two critical stages of development. One is from the age of 11 to 13. It's called synaptogenesis. It's in our book, where the brain explodes getting ready for puberty. Millions and millions of synapses are growing every day. Mm-hmm. The second part is at the age of 14, the prefrontal cortex, which takes most of the injury trauma from football, has not even started to develop yet. This prefrontal cortex, if it is everything, it's called the CEO of the brain. It's everything that we are talking, everything you need as an adult. You cannot function as an adult without this. Damage to the prefrontal cortex leads to mental illness. It's all out there. For the school to say it's been a teenager is basically denying the issue. Your son, his brain has been exposed to repeated head injuries beyond these are the subconcussive blows that do not affect, they don't produce concussions, they don't produce symptoms, but over years have proven that they damage the brain at the microcellular level. You have different densities of the brain that shift at different speeds. So they tear the axons, the myelin that's in the axon that's in the brain. The continuous pounding of the prefrontal cortex in the pounding of the brain means that his brain has been inflamed and swollen for years. The two things that a brain needs, well, three, to heal is blood. It needs oxygen, blood, and it needs rest. Your son's brain hasn't had that. He needs to stop playing ball. There's diagnosis out there, protocols called TES, traumatic encephalopathy syndrome. There are four things that you can look at to see if your son is at a point where he needs to stop playing. Number one, has he played football for more than 5 years? And these are produced by the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Strokes. Has he played football or played contact sports, including American football, for 5 years, two of them in high school? Number two, has he shown signs of a mental illness? Apathy is definitely a mental illness. Light and noise sensitivity, substance abuse, hostility, rage, impulsivity. These are all abnormal changes and not just being a teenager. Number three, is it progressing? And number four, is there no other genetic or familial cause of that mental illness? Then your son may have what's called traumatic encephalopathy syndrome, which is a brain injury. And they need to treat the brain, not just the mental illnesses, which is a big problem out here. I would highly recommend that you take your son to a concussive specialist or a neurologist. There's a brain scan called a DTI scan. And honestly, he needs to stop playing. And because it is the contact sport. And these coaches and athletic directors they're not bad people. They just don't know of the issue of subconcussive trauma, which is now the research in the last 2 years. You just type it in. All these new papers are coming up, research papers on subconcussive trauma, brain damage, and contact sports. And now they're starting to understand what we've been pushing all along. It's not just the brain damage. The damage causes mental illness. And that has been researched and known for 40 years. So, but you have done nothing wrong. This is the other thing I want you to say, is that when mm-hmm. you do not know that you're allowing your kid, like me, I had to overcome a lot of, self-reflection. Okay. Now is the time to take charge of the situation, get your son the attention he needs, get him the rest that his brain needs, because he can recover. And there are tons of new modalities out there, hyperbaric chambers, vagus nerve stimulation, ketamine treatments that are known to help with these types of, your son is one of millions of people that's going through, and just thank the Lord that you're able to just hear this on the call, because you'd have to, nobody's going to tell you this. This is what the high schools believe. Us just being a teenager, when my son had his third concussion, I said, I want to know how much in 2 years, three different sports cleared. And they just gave me the athletic train book. And on the last page, it said subconcussive trauma is a risk that's not understood. Well, your son has been dealing with subconcussive trauma for years now.
You know, you mentioned, as the listener that sent in the question mentioned Pop Warner football. I read that in some states, children 5 years and older can participate in tackle football.
It's a crime.
What does the science say that's an appropriate age to participate in contact sports, or is there one?
There isn't. If you ask me, it should be 18, because that's when, as an adult, you can be informed of a risk. You can smoke. You can vote. You can carry a gun. You can make an adult decision. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right now, the compromise that we are proposing to states is that because the prefrontal cortex doesn't start developing till the age of 14, and that second evolution of synaptogenesis is already over with, if the child is going to play contact sports, at least wait until high school, till the brain is a little bit more resilient, and then play just one season of contact sports. Alan, when you and I were growing up, you played a season of football, and you didn't play till next year. Okay. Now you can play for travel leagues. You can play for the town. You can play for the high school. And right. And our kids are playing football all year round, or right. Like my son, football, then wrestling, and then snowboarding, and all this. This is what causes the damage, the repetitive hits. The science definitely states, or should state, us to say, look, no exposure is what is acceptable for our children. That's the equivalent of going up to your kid and saying, how you doing, son? Smack. And just smacking them in the head 25 times a day. How come we don't do that as adults? Because it's wrong. And we know it hurts them. There is no difference between smacking your kid in the head and putting a helmet on him and telling him to run into another kid 25, 30, 40 times a day. It's the same effects. And those helmets do not work when it comes to subconcussive trauma. This is a myth. Okay, when the brain's in motion and it stops, that brain is in fluid in the skull. It keeps moving and it stops. And if the concussion's severe enough, it also goes back the other way, and you get two concussive areas, two areas of inflammation, and you got two injuries. So you got four injuries and one concussive hit. So yeah, I mean, the kids should not be playing at all. They should be waiting until their brains developed and playing. Not, you can play flag football. Yeah. You know, you can play touch rugby. You can play no head soccer. A soccer ball hits a girl with 70% more force than a boy because they have a longer neck to body ratio and a weaker neck muscle structure. It's how they were. That's how God made them. But we've had many girls take their lives now, and they're like that. They like to head the ball. And that is a subconcussive blow. And they want to limit the amount of blows to I guess there's like the USA Soccer says, we're going to limit the amount. You don't limit. You don't do it at all. This is damaging to our child's brains. And we just need to stop. And the science is driving us there. Society, this is going to end. We have to take better care of our kids.
I couldn't agree more. So one of the thoughts I had is, with all the publicity and money involved in the concussion protocols that we were reading about over the last few years in regards to the NFL, why haven't we heard more about the effects on our young people?
This is the problem with CTE and concussions is that it's completely overshadowed the true risk to our population, which is our kid and athletic populations, which is subconcussive trauma. These athletes, when they do the concussion protocols, that's great. A concussion can heal, but not if you put them back in 2 weeks later and they keep smacking the brain. That inflammation and swelling does not go away, and the damage continues to progress. And you look at you know, these, you know, these NFL players having massive psychological disorders and problems later on in their life or while they're still in the NFL. The problem is that as a society, the researchers have focused on these, you know, this is all in the news, right? I want to see concussion, CTE. Well, before we started writing our book, I could find one paper really on subconcussive trauma related to contact sports. Wasn't even research. Since then, numerous, it's like a whole new area of research that should have been focused on first. Because if we knew there was a problem with adults, why the heck didn't we just extrapolate what we know that adults are hurting and say a kid's brain that is developing, that is vitally vulnerable to any form of trauma? If it's affecting adult, what the heck is it doing to our child populations? Since the 1980s, 2.4 billion Americans have played contact sports and have been exposed to massive amounts of subconcussive trauma. And we have not even looked at this as a potential issue for our children. And it's affecting them in their adults. When CTE was first found in 2009, it was found in NFL players in their 50s and 60s. Now, it is not uncommon to find CTE in players in their 20s and 30s that have taken their lives. Why? Because now they're starting at six. These NFL players in their 50s and 60s started playing maybe middle school, maybe high school, so they had less trauma when their brain was developing. Now these kids are playing while their brain is developing, so we see CTE moving rapidly. They found it in a 17-year-old. Now, my son didn't have it. They very rarely find it in there, but they went back and they found structural damage to his white and gray matter, and that damage is absolutely associated with the psychological disorders that my son suffered from before he took his life.
We're speaking with Bruce Park. He is the author of Youth Contact Sports and Broken Brains. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that maybe you can do as parents or as teachers or as coaches to recognize some of the symptoms. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We're speaking with Bruce Parkman, and we are talking about brain injuries. And we're talking about brain injuries with our children. Bruce, we've got a question that has come in. And one of the things I want to take the time to say is I thank everybody that takes the time to send in questions. We seem to get quite a few from teachers, which I appreciate greatly. This one reads, as a grade school teacher, we are just now being educated in this area. What are some common symptoms of concussions in young athletes, and how should they be managed to prevent long-term brain damage? And this is from Melissa from Houston, Texas.
Melissa, when a child has a concussion is an injury that can heal. Okay, so they bang their head, an accident, you know, that the concussion will heal as long as the brain has those three critical needs. It gets rest, it's not deprived of oxygen, and it's not swollen. The child takes rest. The issue is when the concussion is part of a subconcussive lifestyle, where that child, it could be domestic violence. A lot of women suffer from mental illnesses, from brain damage, from being beaten all the time. But if that child is in a subconcussive lifestyle where they have a concussion, but they're continuing to play contact sports, Then the concussion only exacerbates that subconcussive lifestyle. Their brain is getting damaged. The brain's not allowed to heal. All that damage over time will lead to psychological disorders and cognitive declines. The child will be less smart. This is all science. This is all research. I mean, we have our book. We wrote the book. We give it away. This book is free. Contact our foundation. We'll send you a PDF copy of it. And it's got 100 research papers on it. It's written for fifth grade English, 80 pages. And it was written so that you have some guidance. And the medical director is Julie Stamm, the author of the Brain on Contact Sports. So the concussion is one thing. That is a medical issue. You know, healing, rest, no problem. But when that concussion is part of a subconcussive lifestyle where a child is playing contact sports, we're not talking about playing and rolling around. I had a son, right? I'd be with these boys. They'd be rolling all over the place. Got it. Thump, thump, thump at night. It was loved it, right? We're talking about that. That's when we have the problem where it's not going to get any better. The big thing about a concussion is to conduct what's called a post-concussive survey, PCS. That means 2 weeks later, which never happens. Never happens. 2 weeks, they're back in the field, or 2 weeks, the doctor clears them. They never go back. A post-concussive syndrome checklist is an assessment that a child goes through to make sure, and they have to be honest, that no lingering signs of that concussion are there. Light and noise sensitivity, headaches, eating disorders, sleep disorders. Because if they're there then and they want to play sports, they can't. You need to give them more rest. But right now, a post-concussive syndrome test is not really part of anything. Children almost never go back after the 2 weeks. But if it's just a medical incident, they should get that assessment anyways, because you need to know if your child, if that concussion was worse than you could see. You can't see inside the brain. That's the big problem with this. MRIs look for really massive problems. You know, CT scans, very like tumors and bleeding. It's very, very hard to see if the brain, the child has problems. The other problem, which a lot of people don't know, is the brain cannot feel. So if the brain is in pain, that it doesn't, the child doesn't know that, because the brain does not feel pain. So it is up to the symptoms that will tell us if that brain is on a path to healing. And one way we can make sure that the brain is going to heal is to make sure that child is not playing contact sports while their brain is developing.
And what I hear you saying is that it's not, in other words, don't wait for headaches.
Absolutely. If that child, you know, has had a concussion, do not wait on headaches. And my son complained of headaches periodically, and my wife gave him aspirin. We didn't even think it could have been from his lifestyle, because he didn't complain about them all the time. It's like, Mom, I got a headache. Did you drink enough water? Right. You know, the typical parental approach. So, it's an issue.
Yeah. Now you you mentioned the book, and I just think it's so fantastic that you offer it free to parents that want to read it. What's the website that they go to for that?
It's www.mp for Mac Parkman, FACT.com. So MP Fact, it's the Mac Parkman Foundation for Adolescent Concussive Trauma.com. And we'll send you the links to push out to everybody. We don't want to make money on the book. We want parents to not be in our situation. We just want them to be informed so we can make the changes we need to, because our kids are just, they're suffering.
Yeah. We've got another question coming in. And by the way, I usually have a lot. I get more of my questions. Sure. I'm getting more questions from parents and from listeners and viewers, which I think is wonderful. This one reads, I'm a high school baseball coach and see the benefits of young people playing competitive sports. What measures can be taken to minimize the risk of brain injuries in youth contact sports without completely eliminating their benefits? This is from Brian in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Brian, I want you to understand something, that this is not an anti-sports message. Okay. I'm 61 and I still play rugby. Okay. I believe in sports. What we're saying is, until the age of 14, we promote non-contact forms of sports, including baseball. I think baseball is a beautiful sport. All right. Baseball does not require you to move the brain around. It doesn't impact the brain. You might get an occasional hit to the helmet. Okay. But that's not part of baseball. That's not part of baseball, like tackling in rugby, checking in hockey, heading in soccer. These are parts of the game that affect a child's brain. Sports is awesome. Okay, the teamwork that they learn, the hard work, the ethics, learning the camaraderie, everything that I love about team sports can be learned and experienced by kids without smacking their brains around. So our focus is on to get parents to protect their kids' brains by not exposing them to concussive and subconcussive trauma while their brains are undergoing that critical phase of development. And in high school, they play one contact sports for one season per year, because that brain, scientifically, we know does not mature until 25. It's still developing in high school. You are still taking a risk with that kid's brain by putting him in football, but that is your, decision. But we have to understand the science here. If we continuously hit the brain and expose it to subconcussive trauma, the brain cannot heal and it will be damaged. That's science, that's research, that's fact. And I cannot thank you enough. I wish my son played baseball for a little bit back in the time. But this is not about anti-sports or anti-contact sports. It's about mitigating the risk for these children so that when they play in college, in high school, in college, in the NFL, they still have productive lifetimes after that. The amount of NFL players and hockey players and concussive people from concussive sports, rugby players, that are showing up with dementia and mental illnesses in their 30s and 40s and early on in life is horrible. And we're not allowing them to make informed decisions as parents and coaches that, look, it's not about winning games all the time. It's about healthy sports, healthy participation in sports. And our children's brains are much more important than a winning season. I'm sorry. All right. I love the win.
Don't be sorry.
I'm just questioning. And that's the pushback that we run into. We have not in 2000 conversations with professional athletes, NFL coaches, high school coaches. They love the concept of waiting, because in high school, you finally have position coaches, especially in football. You finally have an athletic trainer. You don't have fathers that really aren't trained in contact sports, and the kids don't show up with injuries. The amount of injuries a child gets in their younger years playing football or hockey are completely unnecessary if they get there, and especially if they don't have the brain injury. So, yeah, it's not about eliminating sports at all. I love sports, and everybody loves it. It's eliminating what is the harm that it's doing to our children before they become adults.
Yeah, and I think one of the things too is that with football is flag football. There's no reason why you can't play flag football till 14 or 18 or whatever, because you're still learning all of the skills that you need to take with you. You're just not taking the beating. So I'm right with you.
Yes, sir.
Now, how can we make a difference? So if you are making a plea out to listeners, to viewers on what they can do, or what role can legislation do? In other words, if it means, look, go to your legislators and tell them you want our vote. These are the things that you want to do. What's the message that you would want them to take to their legislators in regards to young athletes participating in contact sports?
The message is that everybody wins. Nobody's a loser if we delay till 14 of participation in contact sports. Senator McCarthy out of Florida sponsored a bill to prohibit contact sports before the age of, I think, 13. It needs to be moved to 14. But we need to understand that this is about prioritizing our kids. If we do this, then who loses? The child's brain is allowed to develop without the impact of subconcussive exposure. Parents are informed and allowed to make these decisions. You know, Pop Warner and all the youth leagues can transition to flag football leagues. If it becomes known that, for decades, that we have allowed our kids to harm their brains, and now as adults, they're struggling with mental illnesses and the whole nine yards, then the pushback on these professional leagues is going to be large, and it's going to be very, very costly, I do believe. So when we go to our legislatures, this is about prioritizing our children. It's like, look, we need to put our children's brains forward. We did it with seatbelts. We did it with secondhand smoking. You know, we did it with helmet laws. We did it with domestic abuse, the domestic violence. We did it with drugs and underage drinking, the whole nine yards. There is a time when the science and research says, in order to have good public policy, we need to prioritize the health of our populations over other extemporaneous issues like winning games or having a championship, team. Okay. And, you know, but as when the kids are still in sports, win or lose, if we're protecting their brains, they're learning the benefits of sports. So when it comes to legislation, you know, waiting till the age of 14, we'll never get football out of high school. I mean, we've looked at it. It's just, it's not going to happen. I mean, we would like it to happen, but it's not. And as long as parents that play the sport understand the risk they're taking with their child's brain and are comfortable with it, and the child is comfortable with it, and they are doing the things to minimize it, right? Baseline testing, one season, and that's it. Tommy, you're done for the rest of the year. You know, we're going to take a break. Play tiddlywinks, play baseball, right? You know, play basketball. Who cares, right? Don't play football, hockey, you know, all the contact, the subconcussive sports that are out there, where subconcussions are a part of the sport. And I think this is when it's good policy for the legislatures. This affects children, you know, it affects children. I don't care, you know, what color your child is, how old they are, their ethnocentric, you know, whatever their bad demographic is, doesn't matter. This is just good policy, and we have to grow up as a country, and we're not there yet, sir.
Well, and I think to add to that, and for the people out there that are involved in something like a Pop Warner sports organization or anything where there's some form of contact sport, is that I have learned by the businesses that I've been in, the industries that I've worked in, if you don't regulate yourself, when you're presented with information that shows you that you should handle this differently and you don't do it, it ends up in the courts and you lose in a much bigger way. So let's start just making the decisions because it's the right thing to do, not because we had to be forced to do it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, sir. It's and unfortunately, when presented with that, you know, there are, you know, there's a, you know, people do push back because it's how my dad did it, or don't tell me what to do with my kid. And it's like, look, man, you know, you're hurting your child and you don't know it, but now you do. What's your decision, right? What is your decision now that you're informed? Are you going to continue to allow your son or daughter? Girls are playing at Pop Warner all the time now. And it's, do you really intend on harming your child? And if you are, then you need to stop. And this is the science. This is research. This is not a grieving dad. Trust me. I mean, I am that guy. And nobody wants to be in my shoes. And now that I know that my son's death was preventable, and that so many other adults, I know that everybody that's listening to your show knows somebody that played a lot of contact sports that's suffering right now from, you know, some form of, you know, substance abuse, broken families, you know, lost businesses, whatever. And there's no reason for it. What happened? Is anybody looking back at what he did as a child? Right now, our psychological and medical first responder communities are completely untrained. You go in for a concussion at the ER, the doctor doesn't ask you, how long has Tommy played contact sports? Because the next issue is you need to get him evaluated or you might need to stop. My psychologist, you lose a child, you go see one, told me, oh my God, Bruce, he goes, I'm sending the kids back out to play football because it means so much to them. And that's what put them in front of me in the first place. And so we you pull down the athletic training curriculum. I pulled down the best ones in the country. There is no training on subconcussive trauma at all. As a society, we are completely ignorant on this insidious form of brain damage that is hammering our child populations. I've been doing it for 40 years, and it's just got to stop. It's not me saying I wish my son didn't play. I loved my Friday night lights. I loved them. Gosh darn it, I was there. I had pom-poms. I had my bagpipes. I loved watching my son play. But if I would have known for one flipping second that my son was hurting, that he was being harmed on any play, he would have been out of there in 2 seconds. He would have never touched the ball again. But I didn't know. And now I know. And the only way is to share my pain and my grief. And now the science. That book that I just put up has been endorsed by every leading sports neurologist and CTE specialist in this country. Dr. Ann McKee from the Boston University CTE Center, Dr. John McCreary, Dr. Julie Stamm, Dr. Alan Hamilton, author of 4 books on the brain, Dr. Chris Nowinski. I can go on and on and on. And when you talk to the NFL and Pee Wee, where's your research? Where's anything saying that doing this to a child's brain is beneficial? There's nothing. There's nothing. There's not one piece or shred of scientific evidence saying that taking a brain in its developmental stages and slamming it around inside of a brain and then inside of a head, inside of a plastic helmet, is beneficial to the future of that child. There's nothing out there. The logic, science, and research absolutely states that as a society, we need to stop hurting our children, but we need to build that awareness. And Alan, that's where this show is so important, by getting this word out so that people can now question the authorities and say, why didn't I know about this? Why is this not part of basic parenting? It should be. It should be. I talk to way too many parents every year that are suffering like I do, and it's not necessary.
Well, and as you said, I mean, this is exactly why you're on this show. I mean, this show is Answers Network, and there are parents that want answers. They want answers for why their child is acting the way that they are, or they want answers to how they can have a better life together. There's so many things, and which is why I'm so thankful that you came on the show, and even more so that you wrote the book that you did, because now the information is out there. And I love the fact that you're not blaming anybody, but you're saying we've been ignorant. And because we've been ignorant, somebody needed to shine a light on it. You're shining a light on it. We now know. So now it's up to us to make better choices with our children. And I'm just so thankful and grateful that you've dedicated your life to this.
Oh, that's right. That's my last mission before I see my son again and God takes me home, is to just keep working with the you know, parents, organizations, you know, shows like yours that focused on these critical yet unknown issues that affect us. I mean, everybody knows somebody's played contact sports, right? I mean, it's and it's just appalling that this is just as an issue has never been addressed. And when I talk to people like the lights, they're like, well, this all makes sense. I go, right? Well, why didn't we know? And I don't want to, I don't think there's anybody, you know, we've got a sports crazy culture. We love our contact sports, but it's time we start, you know, just doing what's right for our children. And this is an absolute cause of brain damage in our younger populations. It needs to stop.
Well, Bruce, we've got about 2 minutes left. And if I'm reaching over and handing you a magic wand, what is it that you do that gets us to make the changes we need as quickly as possible?
We have to legislate this. There's no other recourse. We did it with seatbelts. We've done it with some. We need to understand that this is a risk to our kids, and we cannot wait for live biomarkers or past the CTE or science or the NFL to wake up or any professional organization in a class action lawsuits that's going to cost them money, pain. We don't want to take football away from America. America is football, but we have to take care of our children. And I think that if everybody got behind flag till 14, no check hockey, no head soccer, touch rugby, non-contact sports of forms of all these sports, and understanding that the brain is an unbelievably beautiful complex organ and your kid only has one. And that brain will determine who they are when they become an adult. And if you damage that brain, they're going to be a damaged adult. It's logical and everything's there. So I think we need to move to legislate this and then to educate. Put this in our medical training, our psychological training, our athletic training, and teach coaches that this ain't all about winning. Okay, this is about healthy sports. And if that kid is concussed, you got to pull him, man. And we get too many reports of coaches, you know, calling out kids and calling them names and they're hurting the team. No, that is a hurt child. And if that child is not important to you, then you don't need to coach. So anyways, that's my magic wand answer. And, you know, and hopefully we'll get there. And it's all going to be due to folks like you, Alan, that aren't afraid to take on these topics and inform their audience, because you actually care about them.
Well, and to those out there that are making decisions in these sports, your reasoning for these sports is to be inclusive. If you can just shift your thought process a little bit, you're actually making it more inclusive if you make the changes that Bruce just made. You're not killing your sport. You're making it more inclusive. And if you really look at the big picture, 10 years from now, you maybe have an even bigger sport. So think about it that way. Let's do the right thing. And Bruce, again, thank you so much for doing everything you're doing to shine a light on this.
Alan, cannot thank you enough, man. I really appreciate the time. And thank you to the audience. God bless you all. And take care. And keep on your journey, sir. You're making a change, and we're with you.
Well, thank you. And you mentioned you have another book coming out. Please stay in touch, because I'd love to hear more.
Okay. I better get back on and open it up again. I've been too busy. But no, thank you so much, Alan, and we will definitely be in touch.
You got it. Thank you. And for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at Answers Network. Or you can just subscribe to the show. It makes it very easy. You can do it through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube. If you want to see us, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more popular podcast platforms. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. And know that the next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.